Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening, everybody. I'm glad we could come together like this. It's nice to see you all. The topic of this talk tonight is essentially the life of a Zen student. So as we know, and as we are taught and as we are trained to do, our practice avoids focusing or giving our attention to a single or unique idea. We don't carry in our mind the idea of a particular goal. In other words, in our practice, we do not emphasize something like an ideal. Many people come to the practice with some ideal event in the future or some ideal belief in the future, and they want to obtain that, and that becomes the point of their practice. But we learn that our practice is about simply emphasizing, keeping our mind ready. And we do that so that the mind can give its full attention is something that may appear. Many of you know the little anecdote. Somebody asked Suzuki Roshi, "Why do you do Zazen so much?" He said, "Because someday I may have to make a decision." So the main effort of our practice is to continue, or trying to continue, to keeping a calm and ready mind. And when we do that, it becomes the basis of trust, a wide feeling of trust. And of course, that becomes the foundation of our practice. Most religions of the world, and both today and for thousands of years, most religions have some idea or something that they believe in very strongly. It is the core of their practice, what they believe in. But in Zen practice, our so-called belief is not in something that we can conceive. It's not about a deity or a doctrine or a person. In other words, a very important point of our practice is not to allow the mind to fall in love with a philosophy. Otherwise, our mind will become stubborn and even quite possibly tyrannical, because we will be getting caught up in a political world. So the belief in Zen, a Zen belief is not in a scripture, and it's not in a doctrine. It's not written down anywhere. Our so-called belief is our practice, and that is, keep a calm mind whatever we do. Keep a calm mind whatever we do. So we are very fortunate where we live and practice in this part of California, one of the most beautiful spots in the world, where we can enjoy many activities that life offers us. We can have a meal together. We can go hiking. We can have a cup of tea with our friends. We can work at something we like, or we can create art. So we allow the mind to be calm so that we can appreciate the activity that we're doing. Like when we take a bite of a piece of fruit, with our practice, we can taste the full flavor of a fruit. And when we are cooking and prepare a favorite dish, we're careful that we add the correct ingredients in the correct measure. And also, with a calm mind, we will be able to feel the ocean water on our skin. We can sense the aroma and the taste of tea. And most importantly, with a calm, steady mind, we can truly see how our friends are doing. In other words, our practice is about appreciating our current circumstance without adding anything or subtracting anything. To fully know an activity or to fully appreciate someone, we have to feel its texture, much like feeling the texture of our breath when we do zazen. When we give our attention to the texture of anything we are doing or of anybody we are with, our breathing will become calm and smooth, and our mind will become calm and smooth. And the opposite is true. When our mind is calm, then we are able to give our full attention. So when we are with each other, when we are with people in any circumstance, and we pay attention to our relationship that's taking place at that moment, and we can feel the texture of the relationship, then we will have a good relationship and we will be friendly in the truest sense. You know, I think that friendship is often looked at as something very pleasant, but friendship is not limited. It's not just limited to pleasant dimensions, such as being sociable, being polite, having fun. True friendship should be felt in all the dimensions of our relationships, even those that may not be so pleasant. Our friendship should always be there. And in that way, we can appreciate the full texture of a person in front of us, and we can know what we might have to do to take care of him or her. So, to appreciate the things of our life and the people in our life, our mind should be calm and clear, and we should pay attention to the texture of our breath and the texture of our own feelings. Then we can appreciate our own texture with calmness. So in Zazen, we make our best effort to sit with a straight posture, with a straight back, eyes open and ears open. In other words, when we sit in Zazen, we are being open to everything and we are making ourselves ready. So we need to have a readiness of mind at all times, or we will attach to something and we will lose our calmness. So in Zazen, we do not try to push ourselves to do something or to achieve something. We do not try to obtain some kind of special state of mind. In other words, Zen is not a special state of mind. I think new people who first come to this practice, because of their readings or because of some talks they've heard, they think that Zen is a way to obtain a special state of mind beyond the ordinary. But this isn't true. This isn't true. In Zen, we simply let our mind be like a mirror to reflect everything that comes our way without distortion. But if we practice in order to obtain some kind of special state of mind, that is not Zen practice. And if we feel the purpose of our practice is to grab, to obtain a certain state of mind, that is not Zen practice. Instead, it becomes Zen drama. We already have the marrow of Zen without trying to have it. We already have the marrow of Zen without trying to obtain it. So we just sit and let our mind express what it is that we already have. In our daily life, we are always on stage. Our daily life is lived in public. Whatever we do in public is being done on a stage, because whatever we do or say in life, we have taken some role, some occupation or some activity. We take on some role in life. And so we are on some stage in each moment. There's no way to live in this world without being on stage. The moment we are born, we are on stage. And if our life has questions or has become troublesome or we have lost clarity, we may think that the purpose of Zen practice is to get off the stage. But that's not possible. Where do you go? Where do we go? The curtain is always up, and we can't get off the stage. We cannot go backstage. So when we understand that, when we have figured that out, that we have to be on a stage, then we can learn to appreciate that it is absolutely necessary to have some role. But we know from our practice that our role is temporary. And the stage we are on is just some expediency and is constantly changing. So our practice is not to be bothered by the role we are playing or the stage we are in or the theater we are in. So the point of our practice is to be on the stage, but not to act. Not to act as if we were in on stage in a theater in San Francisco. We know we are on a stage and it's not possible to get off. So we simply make our effort to be our authentic self. We make an effort not to be an actor with a script to follow. In other words, our practice is to be on the stage of life without a script. In other words, not to live our life according to something already written that have possibly become your own desires. So, by no script, we mean don't be a character on the stage other than your true self. Our daily life has many activities. If we continue our calm Zazen mind through our daily life, we will see that each activity is an expression of something greater. And when we see that our activity is not just some kind of self-contained role we are playing, it is an expression of something bigger, then our life is no longer a big drama. Then the role that we have to play, or the stage or theater we are in, will not limit us. But if we lose the calmness of our mind, we start to feel like we must act on a stage. And this is a problem. I think this is a trap that people fall into. If we feel that we have to act on a stage, fulfill some role that's already been predetermined for us, and we will start to worry about our acting and how people feel about us. In other words, we will worry, what do the critics say? When we feel like that, we have no peace of mind. And that is a problem in the modern world. How do we worry about how do people feel about me? What are they saying about me? Is my acting getting the job done? There's no peace of mind with that kind of thinking. It brings a lot of stress and confusion to our life. Sometimes some people will practice so that they can be like someone else. Maybe somebody admires Suzuki Roshi or the Dalai Lama and they want to be like them. Or maybe they admire some rock star or a musician and they want to be like them. And if we fall into that trap, we are only learning about the drama of Zen. It's like rehearsing to play a role. And wanting to be perfect, to be an admired person, to get good reviews. But we can't be perfect, and we can't be someone else. Our practice is about trying not to control our mind and trying not to let our mind wander around and think. And our practice is not to try to sit perfectly or become Buddha. And so we say, if you meet the Buddha on the road, kill the Buddha. So when we come to practice, we have to let go of the idea of even being a Buddha. So the work of Zen practice is to watch our practice and the practice of others with an open mind so we can truly understand and appreciate the practice. In other words, we have to be continually careful of not trying to gain something. So our practice is not just, we don't do our practice alone or in isolation. Our practice is to work together to do something, to create something that will be of benefit to others, not just to ourselves as individuals. This is our practice, to work together. So to practice with each other is the starting point. But the goal of course, is to practice with everything. People and mountains and trees and stones and rivers. And if we practice with the authentic things of our everyday life, we will not worry about obtaining some kind of goal in the future. That is a great relief. Before we come to practice, or when we are still new to the practice, all of this seems like a very strange idea. And we might say, well, how can I do that? That's impossible. But for us, it's no big secret. As you know, it's no big secret. We just simply work on having a calm mind and paying attention. Sometimes our practice will not go smoothly, will not reach some ideal that we might have had in mind, maybe because of our personality or some experience we had in our life or some experience we had in our mind, the kind of thing that is usually referred to as my karma. When our practice is a little rocky, you say, oh, it's my karma. Whatever it is, whatever happened, whatever is creating some disturbance in our mind, we have to accept it. It's already there. We cannot erase it. It is an experience we once had. It is the memory of that experience. So we shouldn't, there is no need for us to try to get rid of it. It's already happened. So if we practice honestly with determination and see ourself with the clear mind and clear eyes, then we have true practice. Whether it is perfect or not perfect, whether it is right or wrong is not important. It's a matter of simply accepting ourselves and what we are doing right now and paying attention to that and seeing what it will show us. When we sit in Zazen, we will most likely be visited by various thoughts and emotions. And we think what we have to do is to get rid of those things, but there is no need to be free from what comes to our mind during Zazen. There's no need to be free from ideas or images or emotions or memories. When they appear, we simply say, "Oh, here it comes again." That's all. Each one of our lives is expressing something very great, something beyond our own personality and beyond our own individual life. What is being expressed in our life is beyond what can be measured. If we try to measure what we're doing or evaluate what we're doing or evaluate ourselves by comparing ourselves to some ideal or by comparing ourselves to others, we cannot appreciate the true value of our life. We will always have just a relative value, which is always changing. You know, it's like saying, "Oh, yesterday I felt very good. Today I don't feel so good." How we felt yesterday, if it's different than how we feel today, this is a relative value. This is not the true value. This is not the spiritual value with which we want to live our life. So the point is not to use some kind of limited measurement of ourself, a comparative measurement, like, am I doing better than the other guy? Am I getting more likes? Am I getting higher grades? Am I getting more money? When we use that kind of measurement to understand what we're doing with our life, we set limits on what we can understand. So we use the measurement that has no limits. And that way we will know the true value of our life and know what we are doing in our life. When we stay aware of the texture of our breath, our thinking slows down. And the habit of trying to get something will diminish. It will start to fade. It will lose its urgency. The anxiety of trying to get something will diminish, and we will find calmness. So staying aware of our breath is not a terribly exciting activity, but it is vital to our practice. And when we do stay aware of our breath, practice is not complicated, and we will not lose ourself. So we come back, we should always come back to the calm mind that includes everything, so that we can stay aware of the texture of our life and what our life is trying to express. Does anyone have a question?
Hi, Les.
Hi.
Let's see. I just wanted to say thank you for your talk, and it really seemed to dislodge something that I can't quite articulate.
Sandra's husband, Raymond Ray Meyer.
Hi, Ray. Okay.
Hello. Les, you mentioned authentic self. If there's an authentic self, There must be an inauthentic self. Could you try to tell us about the authentic self and the inauthentic self?
If we get caught up in following a particular way of life or a particular belief system without being open to it, whatever else may be around, if we become stubborn in our mind to feelings, to new ideas, if we get stuck in making judgments or criticisms about things, this is creating an inauthentic self. That's what most people do in their everyday lives. But we have all of us here have come to this practice because we don't want to do that anymore. We don't want to be on a stage anymore, playing some role that's not really us. That's the role we play on a stage is not who we are. It's following a script. So when we can lay down a script that we have been following and let our true self express itself, then we have a chance of being authentic, true to what this life is all about, really all about. And what this life is all about has no limits. So, when we know we're on the stage of life and this is what there is, if we try to perfect the role that we've been assigned, then we're only building a monument to something that we have created in our mind, or somebody else has written a script for us. So when we behave spontaneously and selflessly to whomever or whatever appears before us, this is authentic. Behaving spontaneously without a script. This, I think, is the essence of our practice. So let's tear up the script.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dave has his hand up.
Oh, Teresa? Teresa?
Hi, Les. How are you? Thank you for your talk.
Okay.
For many years you went to Canondo every morning for many, many decades. And now for a few years you are no longer there and you're not practicing with other people. How has your practice changed not having Canondo?
Oh, I like to think that my practice has not changed. I am taking care of what I need to take care of, and that is what's changed. Some new situation appeared in my life and my family life, and I have to take care of it. And that, you know, I think that's always been, I'm a pretty responsible person, I think. And that's always been my attitude. So there were years when I was very dedicated to Kanon Do and I felt I have to help take care of it. But now something calls me to take care of something else. It's the same practice. We do what we have to do when our world changes and we are, when we recognize we are needed in a new way or a different way. We just go there. Thank you for your question.
Hi, Les.
Hi, Dave.
Thank you for your talk. What you've been saying about being on a stage, being an actor, following a script, reminds me of a story I heard many years ago that I think is trying to make pretty much the same point.
They can't hear you very
Is this better?
That's good.
In the story, a student is talking to their teacher and says, "You keep saying that I should find my authentic self, but if I look carefully, what I see is that myself actually changes from time to time, depending on the situation and how I'm feeling and who I'm around. And it feels like when I go to the movie theater, and they start showing the previews, and there's a preview that runs for a minute or two, and then another one comes along, and another one comes along, and I'm waiting for the main feature. I'm waiting to find, which of these selves is my authentic self. But all that I just see is these previews over and over again, little snippets of myself, and sometimes they start to repeat, and I'm confused. I don't know how I can find the main feature that's my true self." And the teacher smiles and says, "Your true self isn't any of those. Your true self is the screen. It's the ground on which all the rest of this plays out. And if you don't cling to those little previews, those little roles that you play as an actor, if you just see those as your everyday life, where you can express what's underlying all of that, which is your true nature, then selflessness doesn't come to saying these many little selves are bad and I must destroy them. It just puts them in their place." I wonder if that sounds to you like a similar way of, or another way of saying the same thing that you were saying about not being an actor on a stage.
Well, the screen has a purpose. Somebody invented the screen so that the screen can display various activities. So when we find ourselves spending time watching these previews, rather than become annoyed with them or impatient for the main event, we can remind ourselves this technology is pretty good. I'll just stay here and I'll just sit here and watch them and see what they're trying to tell me. And I have confidence that the main event is coming. You know, it's like saying, "I've done this drill before. I know what's happening. The main event is coming." So sometimes we get distracted by these things that seem trivial or feel like they're getting in the way. But we know the main event is coming. The main event is already here. And we just stay patient until it expresses itself. Thanks, Dave. I'd like to digress for just a little, for just a moment. Travis, do you have that gadget that you showed me yesterday?
I do, yeah.
Can you show everybody? I was really shocked when he showed me this.
It's a pedal, and it's got Les's name. It's named after Les, and it makes vintage Leslie sounds. There's a story around the founder with a similar backstory to Les. So I was happy to find this and share it. So it's something I use when I play guitar.
So apparently it's a product that can be purchased commercially for people who, in that, on that side of music. And so Travis said to me, this fellow who created this, he must know you. And I don't know the man at all. I have never heard of him.
Yeah, he has a interesting parallel where he was a IBM salesman and a double E grad from Cornell, slightly younger than Les, but he has a 50, 60-year career in music making effects pedals for guitars going back to the 60s.
Well, so I was really curious about that device that Travis showed me with my name on it. So I Googled my name, and I didn't come up. But there are several people out there that came up who have the name Lester K.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Travis, can you give us a demonstration of how that alters the sound? I'm kind of curious.
I don't think you can. It's
Yeah, it modulates it. It moves it in a stereo field, and you can switch it from low, like a low frequency, to like a more speeded up frequency. But I don't think I could get the sound to. I mean, I have it here, but I don't think it would come through Zoom. I'm maybe someday in the future, like I could bring the gear over.
So, what I did learn from what Travis showed me is that there are and have been other people with my name. The creator of this product must have known one of them in some way. So that's a little bit of an aside.
Hello, Les. Thank you for the talk. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
So I was thinking about two of the things in the talk. One was about there's a part about friendship, and the other about playing a part. And I've been thinking about how my friendships have changed, particularly since COVID, and how, like, before COVID, we had this part that we all of us used to play where you would say, "Oh, how are you doing?" And they say, "Oh, I'm fine. How are you?" And really, they're probably not fine, but that's just the script that you have. And at least for a lot of the people that I knew during COVID, when you asked the question, you got, "No, I'm okay," or, "I've been better," or, "Things have been a little rough, but I'm glad to see you." You got a more honest answer. And my friendships started to change in terms of you creating spaces for each other to be more authentic self, to sort of be willing to be failing, making mistakes. And thankfully, due to this practice and a lot of good therapy, I've been learning not to beat myself up with mistakes and to realize that being imperfect is, we have that all in common as human. That's what's beautiful that we have in common. So I was wondering, what about, is there anything about the practice in terms of how we can create a space where people can feel like they could be their authentic self and not sort of put off the mask and not have the part. Because for the people that have been able to do that for me, I find that I appreciate them and care for them more, realizing they're imperfect and they still are these amazing people. And I wanted to do more of that.
Okay, that's right. Well, that is a vital part of our practice, to be open to people, to not to try to hide too much of ourselves out of fear or embarrassment or something like that, to just let ourselves be natural, and to make others who we are with feel comfortable in expressing whatever's going on with them. Then let them know we heard them, we see them, and we affirm them. This is how we create a community of people who feel supported of each other, it's how we feel included and let everybody else feel included. So, you know, it's okay to go through the polite little sayings of our everyday life. So when you check out of the supermarket and the cashier says, "How are you?" And you say, I'm fine, and how are you? And that's okay. That's a politeness. That's a way of saying, I see you. I recognize you. And maybe we don't go any deeper than that, but that's enough. We by acknowledging people and not turning away from them, we expand our life. We allow our life to expand.
This talk was brought to you by the Canandoe Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.